Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. In our impersonal, highly divided world, StoryCorps has given us a gift. They have opened a window into people's lives in a way few things have, allowing us to see the humanity in everyone, no matter their circumstances, their station in life, or their story. For more than 20 years, StoryCorps has been traveling the country, collecting those stories from people willing to share them by sitting down behind their microphones. NPR and WFAE listeners have listened to many of those stories during their weekly visits to Morning Edition, but these stories are also part of the largest collection of human voices in the world at the American Folklife Center at the Library of Congress. And now, Charlotteans will have an opportunity to add their voices, their stories to that collection. In just a few weeks, StoryCorps' mobile studio, recording studio, will arrive in Uptown, and they want to hear from you. It isn't the first time they've been here. They came here, I think, in 2013, and again, I believe, in 2022, and they heard from Yalitza Castro and Willie Davis back in 2013. Castro back then was an undocumented immigrant working as a housekeeper in Charlotte, and since 2010, she had also been cooking meals for the homeless. It was through this work that she met Willie, who has been the recipient of many of those meals. To give you a flavor of the stories StoryCorps is collecting, let's begin with theirs, about how the two connected and how it all began.
How did you feel about me taking on your family's name, Mbiwan?
Oh, everybody was elated.
Not just our family,
everybody,
our friends,
everybody. Because to know that we had someone had taken on our family name, it feels like a gift.
I have to say that in my wildest dreams, I never, ever thought I would ever meet Acha's family.
We met up and it was great.
It just clicked. Instant click.
You know, in my birth family, I'm the oldest. So Acha was like my big brother. And through my experience as a college student, he added such a different flavor of life for me. Our conversations were just rich, loving exchanges. And I miss that. You know, we did talk about the fact that I would one day visit Cameroon.
So we ended up making that trip together.
That was just surreal for me, you know, to be there.
This was a whole overnight trip in that van.
Bumpity, bumpity, bumpity.
Yeah. Exactly. Talk about bonding in a little tiny space there with all that dust.
I mean, it was kind of a fun ride, really. You fell asleep on somebody, they fell asleep on you.
That's one of the happiest experiences of my entire life.
That was my best Christmas, yeah. So I was just wondering, what do y'all think about when you think about Acha's legacy?
You! You're very much a part of that. I mean, he was such a bright young man. And him passing away so early, that was part of the tragedy, is the regret and the feeling that he could have contributed so much to this life, to this world. And then to learn that in the short time that he lived, that there was someone like you, that made us feel like, okay, his impact lives on.
We now are part of a family.
Mbiwan family, absolutely.
Very much so. Our own brother would be just elated.
And in a way, we feel like he came back through you. Because now we have a brother again.
In advance of StoryCorps' Charlotte visit, we welcome three of the people who make these stories possible and bring them to us. Sandy Clark is CEO of StoryCorps. Leah Zygmunt is director of the StoryCorps Mobile Tour. And Francesca Pena is their tour manager. And they are all with us this morning. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning, Mike. Great to be
here. Good morning.
Good morning. Sandy, let me start with you. The StoryCorps Mobile Studio will be here in Charlotte April 25th to May 24th. Yeah. Where? Where will you be?
Well, I'm going to turn that over to the rest of my team because I, Leah.
You don't know.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know?
Well, so Francesca, you're the tour manager. Where will you be?
We will be at Imagine-On in Charlotte.
That's on 7th Street for people who don't come downtown very often. Imagine-On is on 7th Street just beyond college. Most of our listeners probably know what StoryCorps is because they've heard some of what you do on the radio. But for those who don't know, exactly what is the goal, Sandy, of StoryCorps? And where did the idea for it come from? Because you've been doing this for a while.
I've been doing it for a while, Mike. And, you know, I think you heard in that story that StoryCorps is about hope and humanity, something that we don't hear enough about. And it is really, you know, this is about hope and humanity from everyday people. StoryCorps in the last 20 years has, you know, crossed the country, been in places that most of us will never get to, in big cities and small communities. And we're so excited to be coming to Charlotte. But it is really the wisdom of everyday people that is the goal of StoryCorps. 20 years ago, StoryCorps' founder, Dave Isay, put a soundproof booth in Grand Central Terminal, one of the busiest places in the world where thousands of people pass each other each and every day, not seeing each other, not hearing each other, not connecting any kind of way. And think about 20 years ago when someone thought about how do we connect as human beings? How do we connect through hope and humanity? And that is really what StoryCorps has been about for the last 20 years and will continue to be so. And I can't think of something that's needed more than ever.
When you tell Francesca, when you tell NPR listeners or WFAE listeners that StoryCorps is coming and they think, well, maybe I have a story I'd like to share. That seems to be easy. But there are some people, believe it or not, who do not listen to NPR or WFAE, but whose stories are just as valuable and just as needed as the ones that NPR listeners might provide. How do you reach them? How do you tell them who you are, what you are, where you are, when you are?
Well, we do outreach before we arrive to a stop, and oftentimes when we're at a stop, to try to reach people who may not be familiar with public radio, as you mentioned. But in addition to the opportunity, we just present it as it's an opportunity to tell your story, and your participants always get a copy of their recording. So you get a memento of the experience. And everyone has a story. Oral histories are a part of so many people's cultures. Maybe not officially recording it in a studio, but stories are always passed down. And so I oftentimes speak of it as a way to kind of formalize that tradition that so many people already have.
Leah, you're the director of the mobile tour, and you have outfitted this Airstream trailer with a studio in it. How often do you tour the country? How long are you on the road every year?
Our team is on the road full time for a year. So The way the tour is built out is we decide on 10 different cities that we're going to go to every year. We spend about 4 to 6 weeks in each location. The reason we're able to go to each of the 10 cities that we go to is with support from local radio stations like WFAE, who see the importance of bringing StoryCorps to their community and offering this as a service to their listeners and beyond. So you know, we're really, really grateful to be partnering with WFAE and to have been able to plan this engagement to come and visit you all and offer this recording experience to folks in Charlotte.
StoryCorps believes, and clearly you are correct, that everybody has a story to tell. And many of the stories that I've heard, either on the radio or because behind the scenes I get some extra material that perhaps listeners aren't privileged to hear, the stories that I've heard are unusual. Some seem like normal parts of everyday life. They all are compelling because they are real stories. They are people's lives. And for some reason, even though we didn't live that life, even the most mundane story seems compelling. Sandy, do you understand why this works this way? Because it does.
Yeah, it really does. You know, and you said it, Mike. You know, these are stories that defy stereotype. These are stories that we don't hear anywhere else. They are the lived experiences of people. And I think what some of these stories tell us is, you know, they show us how people have transformed, right? They show us how people have found each other again. There's so many messages in these stories that people who come into the booth don't actually intend to you know, create a lesson for us all. But I think it's the thing that, you know, hearing someone tell their story in their own voice, of their own experience, of what's most important to them with someone they love, helps us connect in a way that, you know, we start to think about how we live our own lives. We start to think about our own communities. And I think that those are the kinds of stories that make us pull over the side of the road, that kind of have our Friday weep each week, because we don't have a chance to hear stories of hope and humanity nearly enough.
You know, Leah, every day we are living our personal stories. So there are uncountable numbers of stories that make up people's lives. How do you choose, if I were to come to your booth, how would I choose the story I wanted to tell? And if I choose a story that I want to tell that you find not to be so compelling, what do you do about it?
I'm going to speak to your second question because I really liked thinking about that. You know, I think a lot of people who come in to share their story with StoryCorps are thinking of an audience or thinking of the stories that they've heard in media traditionally. And what we found, I've been at StoryCorps for 5 years, and I started as a facilitator with the mobile tour, traveling the country and working with people. And what happened so often was people would say, well, I don't feel like I have a story to share, or I don't feel like I have this perfect narrative, like ones that I've heard in TV or movies or things like that. And so a big goal that we have is just to communicate with them that what's more important than sharing a specific story is having a conversation with someone that you care about and that you love. And it doesn't have to come out perfect. It doesn't have to be linear at all. All the like, but, and ums that come out through your conversation are totally welcome and fine, and we'll archive your story. And what's most important is that you've shared something meaningful with someone that you care about. So I think, you know, for all of those people who would come in and say they didn't feel like they had a story, they might sit down with a family member and talk about what life was like when they grew up and what their siblings were like and things that they don't think other people would find interesting, but their son or daughter who brought them in might find that fascinating and information that they didn't know previously.
Well, Francesca, what do people tell you about why they want to sit behind your microphones and share their stories? Because some of these stories are highly personal, and maybe in previous years, 40 years ago, might have been considered embarrassing or even taboo. But yet people come in and they willingly share these stories, all of which are going to the Library of Congress, some of which appear on national radio.
I think a lot of people come in because they're familiar with StoryCorps, they're familiar with NPR. But there's also a lot of people that come in because their partner brought them in, their conversation partner. And I think that really speaks to StoryCorps, because the conversations are special because of the relationship between the people. So I think it is really special when someone comes in and is like, I'm not familiar with StoryCorps, but I'm here because my spouse asked me to come, my mom asked me to come, my sister. And they're really there to support the person in their life, and then they end up having this wonderful experience together.
When we come back, I want to follow up on something that Leah is quoted as saying in another story that I read about StoryCorps yesterday, and that is, you said, Leah, that people really want to be listened to. I want to come back and talk about that in a moment. We're here with Sandy Clark, the CEO of StoryCorps. They're coming. Francesca Pena and Leah Zygmunt are also with it, and we'll come back with more of our conversation in a moment. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about StoryCorps with three people who make the StoryCorps stories that you hear on NPR and that go into the Library of Congress possible. They are Sandy Clark, who's the CEO of the organization. Francesca Pena is the tour manager, and they are touring the country every day of every year, and they're They're coming here April 25th through May 24th. And Leah Zeigman, who's the director of that mobile tour. And Leah, you said in an interview I read yesterday about you that people really want to be listened to. Elaborate on that. Do these people feel unheard in their everyday lives?
I don't know if they feel unheard, but I think that we don't create as much space for these meaningful conversations to have between loved ones. So at StoryCorps, we have this incredible list of questions that we refer to as the great questions. And it's categorized by the type of relationship. So there's great questions for grandparents, things you might want to ask them about. What was it like when you were growing up? Or great questions for siblings. And you can ask your sibling, you know, what did we fight about when we were little? Or what were our favorite things to do together? And those aren't things that you're necessarily always asking people when you see them on a regular basis. We get in our routine with people in our lives and we don't talk to them in the same way. But I recorded with both of my parents individually at StoryCorps, and I thought I knew everything about them because I was very curious and I always asked them questions about their upbringing and their siblings. And still, there was something about the space that's created at StoryCorps where I felt like there was a little bit more intention behind the time we had with each other. And I learned new information. I learned new things about, like, when my mom danced when she was younger and why she chose her career path. And I had my dad tell a story that he always tells about racing his older sister in the mile to see if he could beat her. And all of these little moments that are now recorded, and we created this intentional space. But I think there's something meaningful about considering someone close to you and saying, I really want to sit down and talk to you about our relationship or the life that you've lived and things that I may or may not know about your life and your experiences, and to really sit and listen, just to listen.
That's one of the things I think is interesting about, because after the death of my mother, my brothers and I sat down late one night with a bottle of wine and just talked about growing up with my parents. And what struck me about that conversation was that each of us had completely different memories or takes on many of the key aspects of our time together. I'm wondering, Francesca, when people come into that booth, does the other person know what the storyteller is going to say? How often do they leave surprised, enlightened, with their eyes opened, shocked, etc.?
I think almost always people learn at least one new thing about the person that they come in with. Again, whether they're siblings and they've known each other their whole life, or they've been married for 40 years. At least one small detail is always new in the conversations, which is really special.
Sandy, do you find, I mean, you started in this booth, as you said, that the StoryCorps began in a booth in Grand Central, mm-hmm. in New York. And then several years later, you launched this mobile studio. So as you began to tour the country, and as you have continued to do so, do you find that the stories that you're hearing from people are the same or are similar to what you heard in New York, or what you hear in Abilene, or what you hear in Seattle or Charlotte? Or are they different as you tour the country?
Well, I think they're both. And they're different because people have different experiences in life. But I think, you know, you really hit on something, Mike, in that, you know, what these stories also tell us is how much we have in common, right? I mean, you know, there are certain threads that run through many of these stories about, you know, our relationships with our family members. I mean, I'm thinking of what you were saying, you and your brothers getting together and talking about your life and growing up, and you know, imagine someone 100 years from now being able, in your family, being able to hear that conversation that you all had, that had different memories of growing up. So both, I mean, you know, there's no, what we do learn is we hear, you know, sort of from various regions of the country, not only that we, you know, have relationships with our family members that are sometimes difficult and sometimes wonderful, But we also, you know, we do hear about, you know, different regional, you know, sort of cultural things from each of these cities as well, through the stories that people tell us. We hear the history of these areas. We hear, you know, what's happening at that time, sort of the cultural, you know, feel for that region. But most of us have a lot in common. And that is what StoryCorps is about, is showing us that we have much more in common than differences.
Do people always come in groups of two or three to into your recording studio, or are there instances where one person comes in and essentially does a monologue?
We definitely have people.
It's good.
We definitely have people who come in by themselves, depending on what their situation is. So there are some people who there isn't someone in their life that they feel comfortable speaking with. And sometimes there's a story they want to share that they'd prefer not to share with someone closer to them. So we like to record and uplift the stories of our military vets in the United States. And that's a situation where oftentimes maybe they haven't shared all of their experience with their spouse or their children, and they'd prefer not to. They might come in by themselves. And in that situation, we have someone from StoryCorps, a StoryCorps staff member, sit across from them and be able to speak with them. And we'll usually ask them ahead of time if there are things that they want to make sure they talk about, things that they don't want to be asked about. So it really depends on if there's a relationship that they want to share or talk about. But we do have people come in by themselves as well.
I wanted to talk about the process, how it all works in a second here, but I want to hear another story from StoryCorps. And I think we got our wires crossed earlier, because I think we played the incorrect story at the top of the show. This is the story that I was referring to at the top of the show, between Yelitza Castro and Willie Davis. Castro was, in 2013, at least here in Charlotte, an undocumented immigrant working as a housekeeper, and she met this homeless individual, Willie, because she had been fixing meals for the homeless as part of her giving back to the community. And let's hear that conversation now.
My kids and me, we was driving and it was raining and really cold. And we saw a guy with a sign asking for some help. And I just gave him $5. And my daughter asked me, "Mommy, why we don't take him to dinner?" I say, "Okay, let's make a U-turn." But he was not there. And we were thinking, we have to do something. Willie, you remember the first dinner together?
Yes, I do.
It was Christmas 2010.
The church van came, picked some of us guys up from the men's shelter. And I'm like, why is this lady coming to the roughest place in Charlotte to do this for us? Some must be fishy about this. But I said, I'm going to go. And when I got out of the van, I smelled the cooking. And then I saw you. I saw a smile on your face. It made everybody feel welcome and comfortable. And when you cooked, it was like what my mom used to cook. And I haven't had that kind of feeling in a long time. And I really needed that.
That night, I finished all the stuff in the kitchen. And when I got to the buffet tables, you guys all together started singing the Feliz Navidad song. And I say, "Oh my gosh, you're singing in Spanish." And I start crying.
Everybody just gave you a standing ovation pretty much. It's just, you don't make us feel homeless. You know us by names and faces. And we know y'all care. Before I met you, Jaleesa, I pretty much almost gave up. But that home-cooked meal, it just brought my self-esteem back up. And now I've got my own place. And
it's really amazing. And that gives me motivation, because I'm here in the United States by myself with my kids, and I know that it's hard. That Christmas dinner is not just a meal, it's try to make your guys feel like we are family.
Every other Saturday feel like Christmas to me. That's why I keep coming. I'm always gonna keep coming.
Not only do these stories bring out the commonality that we kind of all share with each other, even though we don't recognize it in each other necessarily, these stories highlight love and respect for each other. And that's a story from two people who are marginalized by the immigrants, undocumented or otherwise, are often marginalized, and of course homeless people. We kind of look the other way when we encounter one on the streets. Here are two of those marginalized people who have connected and done something to uplift each other. And there's something about hearing a story like that, Sandy, that gives you hope in this divided world for the future.
Yeah, yeah, very much so. You know, I think, you know, StoryCorps really is about how do we see each other as human beings first. And that human connection of, you know, creating family, you know, being meaningful in someone else's life in a way that you didn't even know could happen. You know, these are the kinds of stories, I think, that, you know, call on us also to be better ourselves. And that's how I listen to these stories. I tell you, that story really moved me. I can listen to StoryCorps stories all day long. And as the CEO, I still am drawn to tears because there's something very deep about those human connections.
Francesca, let's talk about how this works, because most of the stories that all of the stories I've heard sound completely organic, very natural, very comfortable. But most people, let's be honest, have never sat behind a microphone before. Most people have never been in a recording studio before. It's a strange and, I would think, an intimidating environment. And yet, they tell these wonderful stories. How does that happen?
There's always somebody from StoryCorps to guide participants through the process. I think from the moment they sign up, they're going to get a call from our participant prep associate confirming the appointment. And then when they either arrive to the booth or they log onto their device, if they're doing a virtual appointment, there's a StoryCorps facilitator to guide them through the process. And it's an interesting model because the facilitator is not necessarily a third member in the conversation, but they're there to assist people through the process. And I think it makes people feel taken care of, and it calms nerves knowing that there's somebody there.
Talk to me about, expand on the role of the facilitator. Are they coaxing some of these stories out of people? Are they jumping in occasionally to ask them to clarify something that they've said that perhaps an ordinary person would not understand? How does it work?
Yeah, the facilitator is really responding to the participants. So some participants come in, they are very chatty, they just bring out so many stories out of one another. And other participants are a little more nervous and would like some help on coming up with questions. So we're there to respond to where people are. And we're also acting as an ear, you know, of the future, because archiving is such a big part of what StoryCorps does. So we want to ensure that anyone who is going to listen to the story in the future, whether that's a loved one of the participant or somebody looking through our archives, is going to have all the context that they need to understand the story fully. So that would be a case where we might ask a clarifying question.
Leah, as somebody who's done this for my entire adult life, all I think about is snipping and editing and fixing and rewriting and making things as clear as they can be. And yet your job, I would seem to me, at StoryCorps is to collect stories, unvarnished stories, real stories from real people, and put them not necessarily on the radio, but in this archive at the Library of Congress. How important then is it to fix these stories or to mold or shape these stories versus just letting them tell the stories and put them in the archive?
Yeah, that's a great question. Something that I say a lot to participants and folks on my team, and what continues to drive me through this work, is thinking about the fact that so many people's stories have been told for them or by other people, and they haven't had as much agency over how their story was told, in what context, when, whether or not they were ready for their story to be shared. And so something that is so meaningful to me about what we do at StoryCorps is it is such an open prompt when people come in. There is absolutely nothing people have to talk about. There's nothing people aren't allowed to talk about. So even on a silly note, sometimes people say, like, can we say bad words on our recording? I say, be yourselves, record yourselves however you want to be preserved. But it is so important to keep it as the story that they've told and what they've chosen to share about themselves. So, you know, as Francesca was mentioning, there are certain times that as facilitators, we're listening just with a clarifying ear. Someone may in passing mention their Uncle John, and we're just making sure we have the information of who that person is and for archival purposes. But other than that, we really don't want to drive or shape the story too much, because we want people to have as much agency over how they're being heard and what's being documented of their lives.
Sandy, you've been doing this for 20 plus years. How many stories have you collected? And of those stories, how many of them end up in the Library of Congress?
Yeah, well, we've had more than almost 700,000 participants so far. Mm. Share their stories. And I call these stories, you know, really the quilt of America, right? And so each of them have contributed, you know, a panel to this quilt. You know, people do have the option of not sharing their stories with the Library of Congress, but I think, you know, 99% of people are sharing their stories because they want some kind of legacy. They want to share something in their own voices. So the majority of people want their stories shared at the Library of Congress. And I also want to say, you know, the facilitators, our mobile team, they are the heart and soul of StoryCorps. I mean, they are our ambassadors. They are the ones who welcome folks into the StoryCorps booth and make sure that they are able to tell their stories in the most authentic way.
How many of the stories that you hear and that you collect end up being on the radio?
Very, very small number of them.
Yeah, I was gonna,
very, very small number. Sorry, I forgot the second part of that question. Very small number. You know, we are obviously on NPR each week, and so you can, you know, do the math, but
yeah,
very, very few are produced into these kind of, you know, pieces that you've been sharing this morning. I don't want anyone to think that that's the bar.
I have less than 30 seconds. How do you choose the stories that make it to the radio?
Well, we have a production team. First of all, you know, facilitators let us know if there's an incredible story that they think should be or should be considered for production. And then we have a production team that actually takes these 40-minute conversations and puts them into 3-minute stories.
StoryCorps is coming to Charlotte April 25th through May 24th, and they'll be in front of Imagineon with their Airstream StoryCorps trailer. We're talking to Sandy Clark, the CEO, Francesca Pena, the tour manager, and Leah Zygmunt, who's the director of the mobile tour. We'll come back with more in a moment. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.
Hey, Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about StoryCorps to three people who make StoryCorps possible. Sandy Clark is the CEO. Francesca Pena is the tour manager. They're coming to town. And Leah Zygmunt is the director of the mobile tour. They will be here in Charlotte in front of Imagineon April 25th through May 24th. And they would love to have you sign up in advance to share your stories with them. And you can do that as soon as this program is over this morning at 10 o'clock. Those registrations will open up at 10 a.m. this morning. Before we continue our conversation, I want to play yet another example of something we probably wouldn't know about and have only learned thanks to a StoryCorps. This is a story from Judd S.D. Kendall. It's a story he told when StoryCorps was in Durham. He grew up in the 50s. And he remembers his childhood being surrounded by animals, farm animals, as well as a variety of wild animals like falcons and raccoons, even a flying squirrel not named Rocky, named Peanuts. He had his comic strips all messed up, which he kept in his room. And they all belonged to his father, Henry, a salesman by trade, but also a World War II vet, who took in wild animals. And one of those animals stood out from the rest. During their visit to StoryCorps, Judd told his son, who was also named Judd, about the special bond that Henry developed with a full-blooded wolf named Peter.
We got a full-blooded wolf as a young pup. He was named Peter. We would all take turns giving the wolf a bottle, and it grew up beautiful, strong, intelligent, My father would come home in his suit from the city after working all day, strip into old clothes, and go out in the backyard and wrestle with a wolf. But I cannot remember any times when he came home and did anything with the kids in the family.
Do you think his military service had anything to do with that?
Yeah. World War II totally changed his life because he suffered from fairly serious PTSD untreated. And he was really very nervous about being with people. The wolf was his best friend. It was his way of having a bond with a living being that did not make him anxious. But then Peter scared the bejesus out of some neighborhood kids who came onto our property. And my father realized the wolf had to go. He found a man who wanted a real wolf in his woods. So the wolf just was gone one day. A few years after that, my father learned that the wolf had been sold to one of these little rural Midwest local zoos. So we went there, and the largest pen was the wolf. My father started saying, "Peter, Peter," and sticking his hands through the fence. And then in what would seem to be an impossible turn of events, my father convinced the people of the zoo to let him go in the cage, and they were wrestling like they used to in the backyard. And the problem became getting my father out of the cage because the wolf was not about to be separated from my father by an inch. And I remember one of the keepers hit the wolf in the hindquarters with a pole, and the wolf turned to snap at him, and my father went out the door. We spoke very little the rest of the trip. He was silent. I sincerely wish that my relationship with my father had been better, because I was not in the least empathetic to him. There really was no relationship except anger within me, but it must have been incredibly hard for him, knowing that his best friend was being left behind in the cage. I wrote a verse to a song about him once. I'll tell you the story of my father, who was born with all the gifts the gods could give, but they sent him off to fight a great war, even though he had his whole life to live. And it's not that he came home wounded, but he came home strangled up inside. And his only friends were the falcon and the wolf, who couldn't understand the fear he'd had to hide.
On the one hand, it's a very moving story. On the other hand, we just learned about what may have been the first emotional support animals in history. Sandy, your website mentions that your mission is to help us believe in each other by illuminating the humanity and the possibility in us all, one story at a time. We live in a deeply divided country in which we have forgotten how to talk to each other. We have forgotten how to treat those with whom we disagree with respect. We demonize people who don't agree with us. And I know that StoryCorps founder Dave Isay worked to decrease political divisions through an effort called One Small Step. How is that project different from your normal work? Because it all seems to be work in that direction. And how has that project borne fruit, or has it borne fruit?
Yes, it absolutely has borne fruit. And, you know, I think it's the same in the sense that, you know, StoryCorps, you know, our mission is to help folks see each other's human beings first. And up to now, StoryCorps has brought together people who love each other, who have very complicated lives too, in many ways. And One Small Step brings strangers together from across the political divide, not to talk about politics first, but to talk about each other as human beings. And we have done around 5,000 interviews. We are in 4 cities across the country and are about to go national. And, you know, we hear over and over and over again, and what we are working with our people in the middle, there's about 80% of our country, most of us don't know this, are in the exhausted majority who don't want all this division. So we think there's way more division than there is. And we have heard over and over again how people, how meaningful it is for people to talk to someone from the other side who they may have demonized, who may, they may have thought didn't want to hear what they had to say. And connecting them as human beings first is what one small step is about. For any transformation, it requires one small step.
And one small step is only one of the initiatives that StoryCorps has launched over the years. Yourself, one focus was on 9/11, in which families who were impacted by that day used conversations to memorialize the loved ones that they lost. You focused on military veterans, on service members and their families. One of the voices, you also focused on the voices of people who have lived the African-American experience in this country, the LGBTQ experience in this country. You've talked to Muslims, you've talked to immigrants and more. If we were to listen, if it was possible to listen to all of these stories, Sandy, what do you think we'd come away with?
Well, I think we come away first and foremost with a deeper understanding of each other. I mean, the reality is we, you know, we are different in many ways, but we make those differences out to be something negative oftentimes. And what we would hear is that, you know, as human beings, we all want the same thing, right? I mean, we want our families to be healthy. We want opportunities. You know, we want us, you know, a nation that celebrates the richness of what's here. And so, you know, I'm a military kid, by the way. I was born in North Carolina. So in Fort Bragg, now Fort Liberty. And, you know, I wish that I had gotten the story from my dad of his experience. And so as we're talking about people signing up, you know, we all think that we have a lot of time to share. And I never had that opportunity. And so, again, I would encourage people to add their voices to the Quilt of America.
Leah, I'm not sure if you can answer this question, but when people come to you to record their stories, and they are either political in nature or they are just oriented in their own personal experiences in their families, but there is a deep divide in some way between those two individuals. Have you witnessed any transformation? When the stories are over, do these people walk away with a better understanding of each other, or do they walk away still maintaining those divisions?
I think so. I mean, I know Sandy said this all happens with one small step. And, you know, I've had the pleasure of being able to work within that program as well and be able to see what happens during those conversations and really observing how different they can be from the traditional conversations that I was used to hearing. But at the same time, there's a similarity there. So something that I heard so often in one small step conversations where, you know, in theory, people are across a divide with each other is a search for sameness and a search for each other's humanity. So before talking about their beliefs, I think people would oftentimes talk about what made them similar. So they would bond over, you know, we're both parents. What is your decision about this? Or how do you feel about this? Or how did being a parent change you? And so I watched so many people really step towards each other and try to learn and understand about who the other person was before diving into, you know, maybe how they see the world a little bit differently. And that has been really, really cool to watch. I think there's certainly a fear that people have of standing alone and thinking differently from other people. But what seems stronger than that is a desire to be able to connect with other people in the midst of that as well.
Francesca, as I understand it, and correct me if I'm wrong, you don't put any parameters on the kinds of stories that you are looking for. Maybe you do. If you do, tell me. But these can, as I understand it, can be about any topic or feeling or experience on the face of the earth. So in advance of signing up to participate here in Charlotte, which begins at 10 o'clock this morning, what would you tell people to help prod them into thinking about the story they might want to share?
I think I would tell people to when they to think back on their life and think about what have been some of the most defining experiences or some of the most impactful people that they've come across in their life. And I think it's a wonderful exercise because one thing that I've walked away with from facilitating so many conversations is that there's many ways to live a life. And I think when people reflect on their life, they kind of put themselves in the seat of being their hero on their hero's journey, to use that kind of metaphor.
They're the star of their own movie.
Yes, exactly. That's another way to put it. But it's, I think people should put themselves in that seat, and because everyone's, in the same way that everyone's story matters, like your life is inherently worthwhile and meaningful. And to take time to reflect on that and take stock of everything you've been through is really special.
I mean, the stories that we hear on the radio are not very long, 3, 4, 5 minutes long at the most, but the stories that end up in the Library of Congress are clearly longer. How long do you allot for these stories to be told when people come into your booth? Sandy, I guess I'm not sure who to ask that question of, but Sandy, go ahead.
40 minutes. Yeah, 40 minutes. So they're much longer, and people have a lot of time to share the nuances of their lives in that 40 minutes.
And Leah, StoryCorps has heard stories on just about every topic under the sun. Can you, I know this is a difficult question, but can you tell us, or have you, do you have any opinion on which stories seem to resonate the most, or is that strictly personal?
Yeah, I think for every person, a different type of story is going to resonate differently. I think that what speaks, you know, beyond the actual storylines is that there's something honest about what people are hearing. There's something human. And I think that, you know, our producers and the folks who work more closely with the stories that people hear widely have such a talent for being able to get at what is really, what is within that story that people will connect with, even if it's such a different story from the one that you've lived. You can still hear something very human within the story. And that's what, you know, I think that's what makes people tear up in their cars on Friday mornings and take a breather before they go into work. So it's working.
Talk about, Francesca, talk about the value of hearing other people's stories, of hearing other people's life experiences as compared to what you have experienced in your own life.
Yeah, I think it's similar to what I was saying before in the sense that you learn that there's so many different ways to live a life. And one of the common things, we archive these recordings, and so we're thinking about overarching themes, and those will be really common across many stories. So those are going to be stories of love, stories of resilience, stories of childhood memories. Those are the same themes, but that's going to look different for everyone. So maybe it's being resilient in health challenges, or maybe it's being resilient in challenges in your career. So we all experience the same thing in different ways.
And you're also talking to people from different generations. And quite honestly, the world can change dramatically from generation to generation. So you're opening a window onto a world that doesn't exist anymore in some cases. And this was done during the Depression by the Federal Works Project. They sent people around the country collecting stories, and they're in the Library of Congress too. When you blow the dust off history and you humanize it in this way, does it affect people in the future in ways that we can't even understand, Sandy?
I would imagine so. You know, it's a window through someone's lived experience. You know, we all have our history books. We all have, you know, these ways of learning about, you know, the history of our families, of the country. But when you actually hear someone tell it, it's very different, right? And so I think it will. I mean, that's, you know, again, you know, we have a chance to look back on and listen back on people's stories, and I think they affect how we think of everything.
I have 45 seconds left. You'll be in town April 25th through May 24th in front of Imaginon with your Airstream StoryCorps trailer. How many people do you hope to hear from, Leah?
We will likely hear from 250 plus individuals in our time in Charlotte.
And you can sign up, and you have to sign up in advance because they just don't want walk-ins. You don't have time for that. They have to be scheduled and slotted in at certain times. That registration opportunity opens at 10 o'clock this morning. How do people register?
You can go to WFAE's website, and we will link to the booking site, or you can go directly to storycorps.org, click on participate, and find the Charlotte tab.
And of course, WFAE is at WFAE.org. Sandy Clark, Francesca Pena, and Leah Zickman, all with StoryCorps. Thank you for the hour.
Celebrating 25 years on the air, Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Wendy Herkey. The senior producers are Gabe Altieri and Sarah D'Elia. Our engineer is Joby Sprinkle. For more information about Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or subscribe to the podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at mazdaofsouthcharlotte.com.